It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber along with Jim Cramer. We are live from the New York Stock Exchange. Carl Quintanilla has the morning off. Let's give you a look at futures, of course, as we get ready to trade a half hour from now. You can see we are looking for a higher opening on all the major averages, at least at this point. The 10-year note yield certainly been one of the key stories. Certainly has been for me and for you. Look at that. Back to 1.755.
Yeah.
This is something that hit 1.6.
Big seller.
Yesterday.
Big seller, big buyer. I mean, it's really kind of crazy.
Wow. But there we are, more or less back to where we were a couple of days ago before some of the recent volatility, of course. And we'll get to why things have calmed down a bit. Let's get to our roadmap. It does start with that pause in volatility. Stocks pointing to a higher open. And you've seen, of course, the bond yields are stabilizing. We also have a key downgrade this morning that's sending shares of Caterpillar lower. This amid concerns, of course, about the trade war and the weakness it's causing in China's economy. And some earnings bright spots. Lyft, yes, that's right, Lyft and Roku, both surging ahead of the bell. We'll also get to some other names as well. But let's begin with the markets. Futures, as you saw, pointing to a higher open on Wall Street, this following the S&P's biggest intraday comeback of the year. Global bond yields, they are stabilizing. Investors digesting better than expected trade data that came out of China in terms of exports there. An escalation in trade tensions between the U.S. and China, of course, has accentuated fears in recent days. Former Treasury Secretary Jack Lew weighed in on the trade war and currency responses yesterday on the closing bell.
We're at a really dangerous moment right now where a trade war is escalating into currency responses, and it's time for leaders on both sides to find a way to de-escalate.
Jim, it has been nothing short of an extraordinary couple of days,
yeah.
Of course. Yesterday we sat here with bond yields collapsing, and you did caution calm, and
yeah,
you said, let's wait on the market. And, of course, we rebounded very quickly yesterday, things calming down within an hour. And then as the day wore on, of course, the major averages moving higher, in particular technology. And you'd pointed to, and we'd said, well, how does this affect the price of Verizon?
Right. I mean, there's two schools of thought. There's the macro school, which is that interest rates are going, you know, just going down. Bond prices soaring. Sell everything because we're going to recession. And then there's the micro, which is what the companies are reporting, augmented, by the way, by the job data. And what's missing in all the macro recession, there was someone on our air this morning who was talking about recession, how it's inevitable. It's inevitable. I found, and what was driving my thinking yesterday was, we've got great unemployment, we've got great consumer spend. We are not an industrial economy. They took that away from us. Most countries in the world are export related, and they try to sell things to us. So I'm more sanguine than most people because we have a lot of great companies that people want to own.
Right. And we pointed out about the dichotomy because for some of our multinationals, which are amongst our largest corporations, there is perhaps a less confidence than there had been as a result.
Oh, no, that is without a doubt.
When you talk, we both talked to the number of people who run these companies, and you can tell they are not as confident.
Right.
They are somewhat frustrated, I would almost say.
Yes, it's true. But I got a hold of the J.P. Morgan yesterday, Jamie Dimon doing his bus tour.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is that they're saying the consumer spend is actually accelerated. And that's
nobody's
really,
arguing
again,
about the strength of the consumer.
Remember, if we were two-thirds industrial corporate and one-third consumer, then we would have negative yields.
Right.
But the fact is that we have, there's good credit creation, much stronger credit creation. It's almost as if the strong dollar hurts some international companies. But the decline in interest is extraordinary. Yesterday, there were some really good numbers in mortgages for the first time. It's starting to dawn on people.
That might be a good time to try to...
So, I mean, look, it's hard to be... If you go in the Wayback Machine and you had this unemployment, say, the 90s, and these bonds, and you would say the market's got to go up to... What's Navarro using?
I don't know what...
There was a piece in this morning's Wall Street Journal.
25,000.
Figured Navarro was being like some sort of, you know, vast... He's a puppet master.
Yes, the Journal had an editorial.
That was so vicious.
Yeah.
Almost as if that he's kind of a cold warrior.
Maybe he is. Maybe he is. But certainly seems to have the president's ear. Let's get, I mean, the news itself.
I've been saying all along he's running things.
Yes, you have.
Have I ever? Jim, did, we have all these other guys talk to the press. They ought to. The press should just be a little more skeptical about who's in charge here.
Well, that goes to the volatility and the concern that we continue to have, which is we never know what's coming next. What's coming next from the president and or his advisors, or frankly, what's coming from the Chinese. I mean, what if, for example, something were to happen with Hong Kong, where there's continued unrest and the Chinese decided to become more aggressive there? That would be a very bad day, one would expect.
Sure. Don't you think they're a puppet? They're useful. I mean, they're a puppet. It's almost called or something. It's she's. But Lamb asks for. Lamb gives up and says, listen, I need you to come in. I need you to come in here. And then they're coming in and they can say she asked us to come in.
Well, that would be, you know, that's again, a risk that at least some are pointing to. You don't know if and when. You hope not, but it's certainly a possibility.
But sentiment, I think, is very negative.
Right.
I think that. We are dealing with situations like a Roku. Now, I know that every time I get too granular, but I want to talk about Roku for a second. You're on the Roku conference call, and you realize there's just these tremendous secular changes in the economy and how people take delivery of entertainment. And David, I was astonished how good that was. One in five households, 30 million actives, ARPU going up, highest growth rate, 24% year over year. David, cord cut, 3.5 hours, cord cut. So you sit there and you say, how early are we? And they're saying, Anthony Wood, who's, by the way, very level-headed, not a promoter, when he says early innings, I think it is.
It's true. Mr. Wood's going to join us, I believe, on the 11th today, as he often does, and I'm actually going to be a part of that.
That's where he was. I booked him last time.
But
this,
you know,
I've had enough of this.
There are some questions in Roku, and we'll ask Mr. Wood about that. For example, how would China tariffs hurt them?
And
think of how many televisions come
addressed
from there,
in the conference
particularly
call,
the cheap ones.
And he's
was
still
it fully
punting.
Addressed?
He's still he punting on it.
He didn't answer the question.
No, it was like a timeout.
And
we'll go back to it.
Yes. And
did
then
you see
also,
how they dodged it?
Yes.
They addressed it by not addressing
and
it.
And then also, you know, Google and Amazon are not exactly shrinking violets when it comes to competing here
remember,
and getting their
the lead,
systems embedded.
But Wood did say the lead is growing against his competitors.
It is. And listen, that's you've pointed out this stock many times terms of as a growth play or as a play on cord cutting and millennials and everything else.
I got two cord cutting kids.
I know.
My daughter showed me how to disable our show. I said, well, it's not really.
But all right, we mentioned the Caterpillar downgrade by Goldman.
You know,
that's another name we should take a look
at. Anthony Wood being booked. I think the cat was fatuous. Yeah, because it's nothing that wasn't said on the conference call. It's late call. My Chapel Trust bought some yesterday below where it is now. Why? Well, because frankly, don't you buy things that are out of favor periodically as long as they're not oil?
Yeah.
As long as they're not oil.
It may not have much of an impact, but it was kind of a, I mean, the call itself.
It's the Emerson call. It could be the 3M call. Anybody that gets growth in China. Now, remember, oil is more important than China now. I think the fact that oil's going down is a threat to CAT.
You do.
I do because they're so big in the Permian.
Mm-hmm. But you're not seeing anybody pull back in the Permian. Yesterday you were talking about the possibility of adding another 5 million barrels a day over the next.
The Chevrons aren't pulling back. The Exxons aren't pulling back.
But some of the
smaller
BPs
operators. Aren't pulling back. But if you go, you know, one of the things that we haven't talked about at all, the worst quarter of the year was Concho, which is a fine company.
Right.
And Concho's drilling rigs. This is really interesting. Thank you for Rusty Brazil for giving this to me. Drilling rigs are down X. Concho's stock is down the same amount. So you've got it. What they want, what the market wants is to continue drilling, but also capital discipline. And it's almost like these companies can't do it. You got something for me?
Just when you mentioned bad quarters, and actually we don't have the full quarter because they're not going to file their 10-Q yet.
I did something bad.
What'd you do?
I realized that Kraft Heinz came out today, so it bumps Concho as the worst quarter.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I was thinking.
We should do a favor
report on that. No, we're not going to do a favor
report. How about a Kramer report?
But you know what? Let's mention it now. We'll take another look at it, of course, when it opens.
Don't
take a look
at
shares
of
Kraft
Heinz
because
unless you have
looking
down radioactive glasses.
The company did report what are preliminary financial results for the first half of 19. They talk about it reflecting lower net sales despite what they say are improving consumer takeaway trends in key markets. But the fact is, the first half of the year was nothing short of very disappointing for this company. Sales were down yet again, more than had been anticipated by the analysts who follow them. And one has to wonder at what point or when, well, certainly Warren Buffett is a significant owner here. I pointed out about tensions. He's denied it. I continue to hear it in terms of Buffett and 3G and where their relationship stands. Take a look at that stock, Jim. It's down 14%.
Yeah, it's a suboptimal situation developing there. It's very interesting that the CEO has said something on the conference call that I really like. Talking directly about the idea that they're going to develop a strategic agenda.
Oh, good.
What were they doing before?
Oh.
We're going sell a lot of cheese whiz. Well, I mean, honestly, this is the worst brand. It's a collection, David, of brands that millennials actually would like to take baseball bats to.
Sometimes it feels like it would be so easy. You've been talking about those brands, Sarah Eisen has for a long time, and they're how unwelcome they are in millennial households.
Pantry.
And this stock's done nothing but go down.
You know what? The only thing that they haven't, they could, if they made an acquisition of Spam, it would really complete their incredible
adjusted EBITDA decreased 19.3% versus the year ago period. $3 billion. Now, that did include a negative 3.3% impact from currency. They're getting hurt there. Excluding that impact, the reduction in adjusted EBITDA, lower organic net sales, of course, higher supply chain costs, spending behind those strategic initiatives, adjusted EPS down 23.8% to $1.44. But it's good now they have a strategy, you say. So
they're going for a strategy.
Yeah,
how's that Maxwell Health sale, Dave, for $3 billion? They getting the $3 billion there for that?
Perhaps.
I mean, this is a house. I thought it was a house of brands. It's a house of cards. House of Cards, one of our best documentaries.
Thank you. I agree that it was probably one of my best. I miss doing those.
David, you know, it's going to go down. The bid. Remember the bid?
Yes.
Unilever?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's when it all started. And we
pointed
so often to that. The failure to, of course, acquire the inability to effectively communicate back and forth clearly with Paul Polman and his team in terms of what they thought and what the Kraft Heinz 3G guys thought and the inability to get that deal done. And since then, to not have done a deal at all, of course. Remember, this is a company that needed to continually do deals. That was part of the strategy. Do them, cut costs. The myth-making that went on, as I've said, I've even made references to other companies where there were myths created around management that ended up not being true.
Are you talking about Al Dunlop?
I'm talking gym teacher. Just because I remember it so well. Not that there's any fraud here, anything like that. Of course not. But that myth-making that Wall Street loves to do, that loves to take part in.
Well, David, I think that I remember when you broke the story of that they weren't going to get Unilever because you talked about putting pickets on the lawn of Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
A hostel.
Yeah.
That was truly the bridge too far. Unilever, very well-run company. But it revealed how desperate the company. And we didn't think of it at the time.
Well, we knew that it was a bad moment for Kraft Heinz.
Do they have to cut the
dividend? They were unable to actually complete a deal. At this point, with a $30-something billion market value, if they're lucky, that kind of thing's off the table.
You know, Heinz used to be a good company, but a lot of people felt that a lot of it was just buyback.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sales growth.
Everybody did zero-based budgeting. Suddenly it wasn't.
Oh, remember that? I'd rather own Altria.
All right, we got a lot more to deal with. I want to weigh in on the Broadcom Symantec transaction. We're likely to see at the end of the day today. Also, we're going to have more on Roku's results.
And don't forget,
Lisa Su. Yes. I won't. What about her?
That new chip. It's actually one of the things that I don't like about our reportage in general, financial reportage. There are people who do things that change a company. Lisa Su put out a chip that's much better than Intel.
Okay. Well, all right. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Well, no, see, it's not macro. It's micro.
I know, but we're looking at the futures. You're talking about a chip. There's nobody.
Oh, look at the fact. I'm trying to make people money.
I know you are.
I mean, the futures is like,
hey. Decide to stick these things in when we're trying to wrap things up here. We got to take a commercial break. Then we'll be right back.
I'm sorry to be so
great.
I'm sorry about the homework. I promise not to do any more homework and be like a macro guy.
Welcome back. Did want to update our viewers on Broadcom and Symantec. Remember, of course, this was a deal in the works some time back that then we first reported, of course, fell apart. Late yesterday, the Journal, I think a couple of others, reporting a story that we can now confirm as well, which is that the two companies did get back together in terms of talking. And in fact, Broadcom is now poised to acquire the enterprise business of Symantec. In fact, sources close to the situation indicate that deal expected to be announced later today after the close. Symantec is releasing earnings after the close as well. And so we will await it. The price tag, a bit over $10 billion, I'm told, Jim. And it will be interesting from Symantec's point of view. A, okay, the proceeds, unclear in terms of the tax basis right. there and how much they'll actually get, but a big number. Broadcom seems happy about it because from what I've understood, this was the business they really wanted all along, but originally they were under the understanding they couldn't buy it separately. They'd only be able to buy the entire company. And as I'd reported previously, 27 was originally thought to be a price, and then it was no longer, and the deal talks fell apart. So what do they use with the, do with the proceeds? What happens to the remainder of Symantec's consumer business? Does it become a fodder for PE, for example?
No.
And where do they go from here, so, I guess? Oh, one final thing.
What?
Broadcom, at least the people, again, familiar with the situation, tell me could see as much as $1 billion in synergies from this particular deal.
I agree
deal.
With that. I think it's a great deal for both. Rick Hill is the interim CEO. I've known Rick for many, many years. He was Novellus, sold that. He came in and he said, holy cow, the more valuable division is the B2C, not the B2B. B2C being LifeLock. LifeLock has really just exploded in sales while the rest of the businesses have been on the decline. I don't want to put words in Rick's mouth.
I got to get LifeLock,
yeah,
by
we
the
all
way,
do. I don't want to put words in Rick's mouth.
Yeah.
But he thinks that LifeLock is an unbelievable gem. Would he think it be the size of the whole company?
Right. I mean, we are talking about
a great cybersecurity individual stock.
And the stock is going to be up sharply, as you see, back to over 23.
And do you hear what you said? I got to get LifeLock. You know what Rick said to me? Everybody's got to get LifeLock.
My friends who had it. The information that you give up on a regular basis, not to mention what's stolen from you. But I realized a few weeks ago we were applying for fishing licenses. I had to get a fishing license because we went fishing in Utah. They wanted everything. Everything.
You need LifeLock.
Some third-party consultant for the state of Utah now has all this information that will, of course, get stolen.
Of course.
And somebody
definitely.
Will. Right. So I got to get LifeLock.
So, well, look, Rick.
Or
Rick,
something.
Rick was
who competes
in shock
with,
that how
who competes
great it
with
was
LifeLock,
when
by
Rick
the way?
Came in.
Who competes with them?
LifeLock?
Yeah.
He would tell you that nobody
I know.
Does.
He'll tell me, but who
nobody.
Does?
Look, Rick has been right to me all along. You know, I'll give you the why I tell you that. Because he told me, listen, Zscaler. Very powerful competitor against the B2B. But LifeLock, nothing.
Right.
And I remember everyone came for Symantec's lunch during this period when Symantec, I don't want to say they fell apart because they always had good technology, but Zscaler and CrowdStrike, but Zscaler is an amazing company. ZS, David. They're
got it.
Brilliant.
All right.
We didn't talk Kronos.
Well, you know what? Why don't you think about your mad dash and what you want to do? Because that's what we're counting down to.
Caterpillar's, Caterpillar's up, by the way. Who has more power?
As well as the opening bell, of course, 10 minutes from now. One more look at futures as we get you ready for that open here at the New York Stock Exchange. Count you down. We got about 7 minutes before we get started with trading here. Time for a mad dash. You threw in something about Lisa Su and chips at the end of our first block of programming while we were going to an ad. I don't know what you were talking about.
I was going to talk about the New Zealand Central Bank cutting rates. What that means
actually,
for
the Philippines
for our viewers.
Too.
Yes,
the Philippines
for our viewers.
That
this is kind of, okay. Look, I'm not going to make too much fun because it matters. But the reason I'm contrasting that is because Lisa Su, she went back and forth with it this morning. They have a new chip, Epic. And it's one, it's got Microsoft working on it, that's Azure, HPE, Dell EMC, VMware, and they just won Twitter and, most importantly, Google. David, this is...
What is this chip do?
It's a faster, better chip than anything Intel has. And Andy Grove, wherever he is rolling over. Never Andy Grove being
he's not
unbelievable.
Happy. He's not
late,
happy
late
about this.
Great scientist.
Why is it somehow the innovation factor is starting
right.
to?
Okay, so I'm glad you mentioned that
road.
Word because what I'm saying is that we can match the macro against innovation. And look, this is Lisa Su. I've told you over and over again. But someone, by the way, rated the stock by starting a rumor that she was going to leave, and I got a hold of her. She's like, love AMD. What the hell? So look, just put it this way. I think the stock goes to. Goes back over the high because of the wins, particularly Google. This we got to get Google Cloud people on. They are gathering momentum.
From their last earnings report, when they actually gave us targets that were significantly higher than what we'd last heard
about
their cloud.
Right.
Still trails Azure and AWS by a lot.
But this is an example of ingenuity and innovation, making it so that you actually want to buy a stock. And I want to congratulate her, because remember, they had nothing. And the stock was at $2. And the balance sheet was awful. She fixes the balance sheet, hires the engineers, of which she was one for IBM, and then decides, you know what, we're going to take on Intel. I had dinner with her, and I said, you can't take on Intel. I mean, stop it.
Right.
And then you're going to go after NVIDIA. Stop it. She goes, nah, I'll take them all on.
Yeah.
Confident, scrappy.
What happens?
Good.
When you grow up in Queens.
There were many references to Queens at dinner.
We give and we take from
Queens. Many references to Queens at dinner.
Yes, we have.
And she and my wife get along. I mean, it's really fun. I mean, I'm sorry. I know it's not about friends.
No, it's about 7.5% on the stock price.
But this is, she is the, I think, the biggest turnaround artist in our lifetime.
You had to go there and just say something with such hyperbole that then
it's hyperbole.
The stuff
that's
that you
hyperbole.
Said previously.
Yeah.
We're back after this. You're watching CNBC's Squawk on the Street. We're live from the financial capital of the world. We got an opening bell going to ring on this Thursday. Right, it is Thursday. Yeah, it's Thursday.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, this week's going by.
You missed hump day.
I didn't miss hump day. We were in the middle of hump day. We had the yields going crazy. We were talking a great deal about, of course, negative interest rates, $15 trillion worth of sovereign debt.
I want to apologize for being calm and suggesting people pick at stocks yesterday, because I violated every macro dictum. Every macro.
So what do you do today there, my friend?
You can scale out of some stuff if you're a trader.
You scale out already?
If you're a trader.
Right.
But I look at Caterpillar and I say the big Goldman downgrade.
Yeah.
Vicious. Horrible. Cat is a has-been. Maybe a wannabe. A poser. Look at the stock.
All right. That's one day. You never know. They might be right over a longer period of time. It's not as though the concerns about China trade have gone away, Jim. They haven't gone away at all.
Less than 10% of CAD is China. Now, how did I discover that? I interviewed Jim Umpleby rather than just look at the macro.
Right. The stock's already, of course, reacted to a certain extent to that as well. There's the applause building. What else? What's the key to the market today?
Key to this market here?
Yes.
Okay. I am going to pronounce Disney as the key to this market. Why?
Because
Disney moved it down yesterday, and Credit Suisse used the decline to raise the price target and recommend it. And I think they're right. They're right. I think Bob Iger, the long knives were out for him. David, it was the night of the long knives. And now that's over.
It is over, and Disney opens up 2%. We'll see how it settles out. Of course, the entire market opening up rather strongly, as you see right there on the real-time exchange back at our headquarters.
First-time advertising.
Yeah, we'll talk a little about Viacom. That stock is up also. Here at the big board, by the way.
Back up the truck on that one.
Resideo, a provider of critical comfort and security solutions in more than 150 million homes. Over at the NASDAQ, Northern Trust. That's a wealth management provider, asset management, of course, banking, Northern Trust. You mentioned Viacom. Might as well get right to it. Decent quarter.
Yes.
They came in above. I'm looking for my notes here. Sorry. I'm like you with all the. Here we go.
Well, I have my notes.
They beat on advertising. Was better than had been anticipated, up 3. Film did a bit better. They had solid, advertising growth. Operating income was ahead of consensus at $757 million. So overall, Viacom responding positively. As I said yesterday, it's getting really close. I swear it really is.
I can't
Viacom and CBS, most likely early next week.
Going back and forth with Bakish this morning, the CEO, he reminds me that Pluto TV, which they bought maybe.
Yes. Remember, he came on. He was very excited about Pluto TV.
Yes, he did. It's now up to around 18 million monthly average users. That's up 50% since they announced the acquisition just in January.
Advertising-supported streaming service.
Yes, and that's good. And, look, we can talk about Roku, too. We really haven't talked about Roku as such a big winner. I think Viacom, my chapel just owns it, it's flatlined for ages. Maybe it's done flatlining.
It may be. But the most important thing coming for it is the merger with CBS and the two sides hammering out an exchange ratio. This certainly helps having a decent quarter.
What are they asking you? What the exchange ratio? What are you telling them the ratio should be?
Higher. There you go. Higher.
Jackie Wilson ratio.
Yeah.
Okay.
Higher.
How's that Kraft Heinz doing? And when, you know, once they open, we tend not to talk about them.
Well, we need to talk about them because it's important to do so. We talked a lot about Kraft Heinz.
How's the credit there?
You know, Kraft Heinz, I mean, is down 49. What do we got now for the year? It's down 55% over the last 12 months. It is, I think, amongst Mr. Buffett's holdings, by far the worst performer, as you might expect.
You had to bring that up. Is that right?
And you just wonder, what's next for this company in terms of sort of trying to turn it around?
Well, how about the $30 billion in debt? Maybe that plays a role. They need Joe Pop in there. Joe Pop and buying back, you know, really crunching the debt at Bausch & Lomb.
Bausch & Lomb.
Really reinvented Valeant as a real company with actual drugs.
You had Joe Pop on the show last
Joe's
night.
I think Joe's real good.
You do. And but I haven't taken a look. Yeah. What's Bausch & Lomb doing today?
I know, because you can talk about Perrigo, but I don't think that's right.
Well, Bausch Health, right? BHC? Yeah. That's up a little bit.
Do you know that he used to play ice hockey with one of our best producers, Jason? Jason Wolf. Ice hockey.
Joe Pop is a very nice guy.
He's Gretzky.
But you've
he's
used that in the past. I don't mean that in a derisive way.
No, he is. He happens to be very, very humble man. And he's undoing what Valiant did. And Kraft has to get an undoer to come in and really just get rid of some brands.
Well, to be fair, Kraft does have a new CEO. To recap, by the way, on Kraft, because we have spent a good amount of time talking about it. First half organic revenues were down 1.5%. They did have a 1.2% negative impact from retail inventory reductions. Volume mix was flat, reduction in retail inventory levels. The fiscal year 19 guidance commentary, not issuing formal guidance, but from a financial perspective, this is a quote, we do expect many of the top and bottom line factors that held back the first half to fade in the second half. But they're not going to provide or update specific point estimate financial guidance. They are setting short-term guidance targets publicly. Wouldn't be productive, they say, to do that publicly, Jim. And divestitures want to spend more time evaluating, but they don't want to rush.
That's funny. This is a food stock. Most predictable group. The old days, but this is that new generation.
Can we go back on Kraft Heinz to the Unilever? Let's go back a couple of years, just to put in perspective the size of this company, the way it had been mythologized in terms of the ability of 3G to cut costs enormously, to increase profitability dramatically. I mean, there it is. You're talking about a stock that was close to $100 and is now $26.88.
That's interesting. The companies that are inventing and reinventing themselves in food are actually in General Mills starting to do a little bit better.
Right.
Kellogg, David, had a decent quarter for the first time in a long time.
Even Campbell Soup, after an activist and a new management has come in, has sort of stabilized things.
Right. So there's actually a tailwind to this group, with the exception of the tornado facing Kraft Heinz. But the group is out of the doghouse, so to speak. Smucker, does dog food, not that great. But there's reason to believe that you could have done a much, much better job, because other companies have really turned it around.
Yes, they have. Speaking of turning around, our market continues to trade higher. The S&P is up 0.5%, NASDAQ as well. And as you might expect, all the major players, I mean, Apple, Facebook, Google, all up. Nothing extraordinary at this point.
No, but Symantec and Advanced Micro. Boy, it's interesting. TripAdvisor, everyone was so negative about it last night.
Yeah.
Knocking the stock down. They're really pulling it, just ramping. David, if you believe that there's a worldwide recession, I'm urging you not to listen to the Booking Holdings call. To the Booking Holdings call.
Okay.
Especially, they call out strength in Europe.
Okay.
They have double-digit growth in rooms. People are traveling more than anyone thought. Is that worldwide recession? I'm doing a lot of work on Boeing.
And where is that work on Boeing leading you?
It's interesting. A lot of people feel that they were a step above safety over Airbus. And there may have been some complacency because of that. But I'm doing a lot of work on how much redundancy there was, whether there was enough redundancy. That apparently is a big issue, particularly with the military, by the way, where they do much more redundancy than they do in consumer. So that's the thing. Look, I'm just working on what the heck is happening, because I still think that the news flow, they haven't gotten control of it. And that's to the detriment.
Do you think that at some point when this all, that you've got to fire the CEO? I'll just ask the question. Somebody's got to pay for this. Somebody has to go, right?
Typically in corporate America, that's the case. So I don't know. I mean, I think that we lack info. We still lack info. And there are a lot of people who talk about how this is going to hurt the GDP if they stop production. I think they're further along than that. I think that the issue is the rest of the FAAs around the world. I don't know if it goes their way, but there are real issues. I mean, that have not been, I believe, acknowledged, real engineering issues. And that's what I've been working on, and I don't have a comfort feel about that. I just don't. And this is Boeing, which is the safest company. Yeah, really, safety is the top
Agreed.
Priority. So it's a little disconcerting.
Here's a name I don't think I've mentioned in years. Liberty Global, up about 2.6%. Why? Well, it's kind of interesting. John Malone says, you know, the company, Liberty Global, remember, is separate, but may tender for as much as 10%. That's helping that stock, LBTY. Of course, they have that Vodafone deal that they've recently completed as well. But you can see those shares trading a bit higher. Don't often see that, though.
Do you think that
it's been a while, I should say, since we have seen a Liberty company
entertainment.
Say they would tender.
Is entertainment doing better as a concept?
Entertainment?
Well,
what do you mean by that?
Viacom ad numbers were up.
Yes.
I did not think Disney was, that was not the weakness in Disney. When you look at parent company, this network, Comcast, entertainment
yes.
doing quite well. I'm wondering if there isn't some sort of secular rebirth here. Some people say it's cyclical, but entertainment seems to have gotten more experiential and people like it more.
You know, what I would argue what is interesting, and Steve Burke, our boss or our boss's boss,
right.
Pointed this out, of course, the man who runs NBC Universal during the conference call. He said the most interesting part in the biggest category of advertising in the upfront at NBC and at the cable networks is from companies that are digital native companies. The FANG companies, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, also Peloton, companies like that, businesses, streaming businesses, businesses that basically exist on the internet. Ironically, those are the businesses that are putting some pressure on our ratings. But interestingly, those businesses find television advertising very, very effective. And because they're so data-oriented, they can measure the impact. So well over $1 billion this year came from digital native companies that literally didn't advertise 5 years ago, Jim.
Yeah, this is incredible. And I keep hearing that that's how they're bringing in customers. By the way, scatter market, Disney, very, very strong. Called out by Iger.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, they're... When you hear the TV campaigns,
and that was, by the way, from Steve
Burke
a couple of weeks ago, July 25th, somewhere in there.
Grubhub thinks it's gotten tremendous reach because of its ad campaign. You know,
right.
Just
so they still use. So all these digital companies, digital native companies, are using good old fashioned linear television to advertise to try and.
You know who's going to have to do a digital Zillow. They got to work there.
Let's get to a couple of stocks we haven't mentioned yet, Jim.
Yeah,
you're right, Zillow.
Wood chopping.
Yeah. Lyft.
That's a horrible conference call.
Wait, Zillow down a lot? I haven't looked.
That's just a horrible. I'm sorry. I know the guy was trying to be creative talking about the moon launch and the Washington Monument, 555 feet versus Zillow, but, you know, it's like an obelisk. It's like an obelisk.
It is?
Yeah, like an ibis. Lyft was good, David.
Wait, hold on. Zillow's down 16.5%.
They're doing this big initiative, buying homes, you know, the Zillow.
Can we show that?
Yeah. Algorithmic bidding for homes. They do it for you instantly.
Right.
Other metrics not that great, by the way. And the street is skeptical because the street believes that they're going to be long a lot of homes. They are trying to do algo for housing. And some people feel it's not necessarily going to work. They're growing the division very fast, maybe too fast for their own good. I do believe that there is a way to make that work, but boy, Zillow peaked
Spencer's gone.
Yeah, Spencer's gone. It's a guy named Rich Barton, and I would advise Rich that you don't be creative and funny at the beginning of a call when you miss the numbers. You be very matter of fact. And I don't know the gentleman, but he needed to be more matter of fact.
I mentioned Lyft. Let's get to it quickly because the stock is up almost 5%. This is the second quarter I think it's reported as a public company. And they're losing a lot of money. But the metrics people care about, riders, number of riders,
and
revenues,
right? And remember,
all better than had been anticipated.
The goal is to not be a cab company. And they have a lot of initiatives to not be a cab company. In the meantime, they're not losing as much money as people thought. I found it eye-opening. How many things Lyft is doing to become more and to be a vast transportation company. When you hear, I really just hope that, when, you know, we've got tonight, you know, reports tonight, Yeah. And David, if they talk about Uber Freight, do you know that they have actually lowered the price of taking something from here to there with Uber Freight, which may be the unsung division?
Oh, there you go. Productivity increases, efficiency. It's why we've got no inflation. These kinds of things, right?
David, I completely agree. Gary Cohn first posited that in a Davos, really Davos method of...
Gary Cohn, where is he these days?
He's making money.
Making money? Somewhere.
Yeah, of course
like
he's
that
making
always,
money.
Guys like that always figure out a way to make money. By the way, keep an eye. The lockup on Lyft still scares some people. We should always point that out. That lockup, yeah, it should.
Well, look at that little premature lockup at Beyond Meat, which is now starting to pay the price. That stock is not
and
worth...
Finally, Jim, before we get to Bob Pisani to cover more here, Roku is up over 18%.
It's an unbelievable conference call.
Strong.
I mean, I took down so many notes in the Roku conference call. I was like, my wife was saying, what are you scrolling furiously? I said, I'm listening to a conference call that may be one of the greatest versus what Amazon was supposed to do to them. And you have Anthony, to point out, you have Anthony on. Remember,
Yes, the 11 a.m. show here called Squawk Alley has
Bring him out.
I will. I'll
quick
try my
answers.
Best.
Try to get longer answers from
him. Okay, thank you for that tip.
And when we come back to this, we're in commercial break, right?
Yes. Want
to say that?
Yeah. I appreciate the tip. I'm new to this. Bob Pisani's got a lot more on what's moving this morning. Bob.
Good morning, David. Nice little bounce here. And all the right sectors are bouncing. Your global cyclicals moving on the upside. Just take a look here. We've got... sectors, semiconductors, energy doing a little bit better overall. Bank stocks up a little bit here. Materials up. And finally, a little bit of a downside on utilities. Have something to say about that in a minute here. The two big market themes right now. There's a lot of hope out there that somehow there might be some kind of second truce on China evolving. We'll see about that. They've got more stability now. But what's the probability of a recession? And whether you think the stock market is going to be stable is... depends on what you think about a recession probability. So everybody's out with their recession probabilities. J.P. Morgan had a note, some of the analysts over there, saying the probability of recession was less than 50% right now. If you put that up, you could see that. And there are other people who think the probability is higher than 50% on a recession. But there's J.P. Morgan here. Downturn in the economic in coming months still below 50%. So a lot of debate on what that's exactly going to mean. Industrials today are the big topic of discussion. I agree with Jim's point. Goldman's downgraded Caterpillar a little late, thanks, down 12% in this quarter. But nonetheless, they've got a point here. Caterpillar's up, Deere, Emerson, Cummins, 3M, all up. But don't kid yourself. These stocks are all down 7, 8, 9%. Just this month, the last five or six trading days. So something is going on here. We saw some freight numbers a little bit weaker than expected recently. We've had some issues just debating. Barclays was talking about an industrial recession in the companies that they cover overall here. So you can see there is something going on here. And the numbers for the second half of the year in industrials have been coming down rather dramatically. So, yes, it's a late call, but you get the point. They're finally catching up. Here's something that bothers me a little bit here. Everybody's talking about, the defensive names are doing really well. So everybody loves utilities and REITs and consumer staples, they're all doing better so far. And generally, it's big cyclical names that are out there, your energy, your industrials and technology stocks, they're all underperforming. That's great. It's nice to hear it. I like utilities. The problem I have is they don't move the dial much. So, yes, it's nice that they're doing well this year, but they're pricey. They're up 15% year to date, about in line with the S&P 500. The multiple's high, 18 times forward earnings, almost 19 times. The historical multiple is about 15. And the bottom line here is they're just rather expensive right now. The final thing I just have objection for utilities is they're 3% of the S&P 500. Technology's 21%. The top four are 60% of the S&P 500. Utilities and REITs just don't move the dial that much. And even though I think it's terrific, you better worry a lot more about how the industrials and how technology and about how bank stocks are doing if you really want to move the market. Guys, back to you.
Thank you, Bob Pisani. Let's go to the bond pits, of course. Things have been pretty busy there. Rick Santelli joins us from the CME Group in Chicago. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, David. It's hard to imagine that yesterday this was kind of like the crime scene, so to speak. All the volatility in the interest rate, sovereign debt complex, spread movements, volatility, TY, VIX, all really started to flash yellow. And indeed they should. We have a lot of lingering issues. Various things pop up to be the catalyst or the messenger that kind of quakes some of the fixed income sovereign lines over the last several years, but it certainly has settled down. Let's look at a one-week chart of twos. You can see how we had the big drift. Now we're stabilizing. You could also see it in 10 years. But what's really fascinating as you look at that 10-year chart is we had a 159 intraday low yesterday. Here we sit right now at, what, 176. So how do you make 176 look like a high yield? Well, you start at 159 because on the 31st of July, we're still above 2%. So let's not say that it all just disappeared. And if you look at a 30-year, same scenario. Intraday 211, currently at 228. On July 31st, it was above 2.5%. So you get the idea. We certainly did have a big move. But I think the 30-year bond continues to be, at least for many, including me, the canary in the coal mine, along with the dollar valuations. Because if you look at it, July 2016, we just held the all-time low closing yield, like right to the tick. An amazing technical feat. And finally, an intraday of boons. German government's talking about issuing debt with the express purpose of addressing some of their climate issue programs. The boon yield spiked a bit on that. David and Jim, back to you.
Rick, thank you. Rick Santelli with Bond Report.
You see that Kraft Heinz says that soy is a major opportunity for them.
I'm sorry, Kraft Heinz says what?
That soy is a major opportunity.
Major opportunity?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I'm just pointing it out that you take it where you can
is
get it.
Kind of like plastics
see, soy sauce in China.
For Benjamin, and it's soy now?
Soy sauce in China as a growth opportunity. Who knew?
Who knew? There it is, down 13%. Changing topics a bit here, Samsung has a long history of trolling Apple in its commercials.
I still use these headphones with the TED?
Yeah, but you'll need an adapter, or as most people like to call it, a dongle.
A what?
A dongle.
A dongle?
Yeah, a dongle. It comes in the box.
But what if I just need to charge at the same time?
Then you're going to need another type of dongle.
Like a double dongle?
Yeah, double dongle, I guess.
That sounds explicit.
Now Samsung is cloning one of the iPhone features it once mocked and has quietly deleted records of the ad. Samsung's unveiling its new Note 10 last night, and it doesn't come with a headphone jack.
Well, let's remember that the president's tariffs gives Samsung a huge advantage over Apple.
Yes.
And when you mention that to the administration, just say, well, listen, why doesn't Tim Cook get everything here?
Really? Why doesn't he move his production to South Korea? I mean, is that really what it's going to come down to?
Well,
by the way, we should point out the trade deficit has not changed. You know, the administration can talk all it wants about moving manufacturing back here. Larry comes on. I'm not quite sure what they cite as the statistics to prove that, Jim. But the trade deficit is not changing. Supply chains are moving away from China
and that's happening
to other places.
It's just you need to get that port of Haiphong going. David, but they did. The journal did say that there's been more than 60 billion coming into the treasury.
Tariffs.
The journal did that, not the president. 100 billion, they said. The president promised 100 billion to get 100 billion.
No, that we're collecting the tariffs at Treasury.
Bearish sentiment.
Because it's a tax.
24.
What?
Bearish sentiment, 48 from 24. That's going to keep the market from plummeting. Let me get some macro when we come back. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.